The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
People are asking me, you got any new books planned? Yeah, I do. I'm writing a book about reverse psychology. Our marketing strategy is a little different. We're going to send out all kinds of publicity. It's going to say, please don't buy it. I don't want you to buy this book. I'm Dr. Ray Grandy. Thanks for joining me here. You know, oftentimes I will say, first of all, this is The Doctor Is In. The Monday version of The Doctor Is In is E-Person Monday, where we take on the E-Persons. Let me grab this stack here. I got the stack in front of me. There we go. I will oftentimes come up with an idea for a monologue somewhere during the week. Something will hit me. Yesterday in Mass, I talked to my wife after, and I said, honey, I got an idea for a monologue. It hit me and had me not forget it. And, of course, I forgot it. I always forget it. I say dumb things to myself. I don't have to write it down. I won't forget. And every time I forget. But this time, the monologue hit me while I was saying my opening show lines. Just now, when I was talking about writing a book about reverse psychology, our marketing strategy, don't buy it. It just hit me. My original monologue was going to be about neurochemical changes in the brain because of cell phones. I'll save that for a future date. And I know people are going to go, oh, no, no, no. I want to hear that. I want to hear that. We'll get to it. Get to it. But for right now, we're gonna do a different monologue. And then we will get to your e-persons. And the stack is getting larger and larger and larger, too. One of the things that's also happening is on the television show, my executive producer makes little announcements. We'd like to hear from you, too. So if you'd like to email us at dra.com. So that's what's happening with the e-persons. They're coming in pretty fast and furious. And the ones that are furious are angry at me for something I said or didn't say. Reverse psychology. I want to talk about that. The mindset behind reverse psychology is that if I want you to do something, I'm going to count on your natural rebellion if I tell you not to do it. If I say I want you to do this, I'll count on your natural rebellion to not do it. This is a trap for parents. Here's a scenario. Your little daughter, Lavina, is at grandma and grandpa's. You're getting ready to leave. And you say, okay, give grandpa a hug goodbye. And she doesn't want to. Come on, give grandpa a hug goodbye. He would really like to have one of your hugs. He really loves your hugs. And she's being a little kid and she won't do it. What do? You pull out the reverse psychology. Okay, well, grandpa doesn't want you to hug him. That's it. Nope, you're not allowed to hug him. Grandpa doesn't want you to hug him. Now, sometimes little kids see right through this. Usually by about age 3 or 3 and a half, they decide, I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to get me what you really tried to get me to do before, but now you're figuring if you say I can't do it, I'm going to want to do it. Oh, pretty twicky, but I'm on to you. But that's not the real trap in reverse psychology parenting. The real trap in it is I'm going to want you to obey me by teaching you to disobey me. If you say, no, no, Grandpa doesn't want to kiss, he doesn't want to hug, forget it, and I don't want you to hug him, then she turns around and hugs him. What have you just done? You've said, go ahead, disobey me. Now, as an aside here, this brings up the issue, and child development people are, as a group, totally against this. Don't require a child to say, I'm sorry, to give a hug, to say please, to say thank you, to share, if they don't want to. You don't require this. This has to be a natural expression, and the child is resisting it. So by forcing it, you're just overloading your authority on the kid. That's all you're doing. And you're making them perform, if you will, without any kind of associated emotion to it. I'm not sorry, but you made me say I'm sorry. You made me say I'm sorry to Grandpa because I was mean. I'm not sorry. I don't feel sorry. I don't care. I don't want to. So you making me does nothing. At least that's the theory. That's the theory. But the question really becomes, are we establishing guidelines for proper conduct, even though the child doesn't agree with those guidelines? I don't want to say please. I don't want to say thank you. I don't want to say I'm sorry. I don't want to hug. I don't want to do any of that. I'm a kid. It's very understandable that they don't want to do that. The philosophers, before we all became so enlightened, would say things like, form the habit first. Perform the behavior first. In time, the motive will follow. In time, the emotion will follow. A little kid who says please and thank you doesn't really understand the concept. They don't know. They don't know gratitude. They don't know what they're saying. They're mouthing words. But let's say they're 7 now, and they've been mouthing those words for quite a while. It has become somewhat of an etiquette habit. So they say it. Would that not be a lot easier at age 7 to start to understand what the words mean than to introduce the concept at age 7 and the previous 3, 4, 5 years of verbalization the child never had to show manners? My son Andrew's 31 years old. He's the oldest of the kids. We had a rule when the kids were growing up that you had to say please and thank you. That's just minimum etiquette. And if you were at a restaurant and you ordered, you had to say please. And we didn't say, what do you say? What do you say? What's the magic word? No, no, no. We stopped doing that after the first few remindings. We had a rule that if you didn't, then you had to wait for the server to come back so you could, because you didn't get your food if you didn't say please and thank you. My son lives in Rhode Island. We go there, visit, and it's interesting to see him order food. He will say, may I have the pancakes, please? And may I please have a Coke? He says please with everything now. Now, part of it's his nature. He's just that kind of kid. But part of it is that's a habit he learned very young. And it just became something that was very easy for him. So forcing certain things as a parent are good. But it isn't good to force a child to disobey you by using reverse psychology. Nope, I don't want you to say please. I don't want you to say please. Don't say please. Nope. You're not allowed to say please. What good did that get you? Here. If you want to obey me, disobey me. Huh? So I am writing a book about reverse psychology, and I do not want you to buy it. Matter of fact, I don't even want you to listen to this monologue. I'm Dr. Ray.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere. And that's a doctor's order.
Super easy, barely an inconvenience. Really.
I didn't take my faith seriously, which probably means I never really got it to begin with. No, I didn't want to give up sin. I mean, the reason we sin is because sin is fun. But it's self-love sin. But it's amazing with God's grace how easy trying to not sin it really is.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, giving you a psycho-aerobic workout, putting your IQ into the target zone. I don't know what your target zone is, although I do know that the target zone drops about 8 points with each child you have in your home. You know how a lot of times you pay tuition in a parochial school and the tuition drops by the kid? You know, the first kid is so much, and then if you have a second kid, there's a discount, and then if you have a third kid, there's a discount. If you have a fourth kid, it's free. Well, that's not the way it works on IQ with children. There's a multiplicative effect. The more children, the more, that is a big word, I know it, I wanted to use that. I was going to say exponential. The more children you have, the bigger the IQ point drop per child. You know, maybe the first kid you lose 4 IQ points. Then you have a second, there's a cumulative effect. You don't just lose 8, you lose like 12. You average 6 points per kid. Why? Well, because they interact with each other. That confuses you. This is E-Person Monday on The Doctor Is In. This came from a very nice lady who initially didn't like me. I get that. Oh, where is it here? I got to find out. This is from Mary. Mary says this. Well, first of all, she said some nice things about me. But then she said, when I first started listening to you, I was taken aback by your commentary. Now, I don't know if she means the opening monologues or the badinage with the callers. It took a few shows. Well, that's pretty good if it only took a few shows. Some people will say, oh, it took me like a year. And I'll say, why did you keep listening? Probably because they were listening to Catholic radio. I just happened to be on there. She says, it took me a few shows before I got rid of the chip on my shoulder and really started to hear the humor. Then she goes on to be very, very sweet and very nice. Okay. Let's see. My husband and I are married 22 years. We have a daughter, 12. currently in private school, seventh grade. She's been there since the third grade. Our family is a traditional one. Husband works outside the home. I am a mom who loves taking care of my family. Our daughter has been begging to be homeschooled for over 2 years now. She has cousins and friends who are homeschooled. Her reasons? I don't like my school. I don't connect with the kids there. It is a school for richer kids. Homeschooling will allow me to finish my work in a timely manner. I assume she's meaning quicker. I can wear my own clothes. I have more free time on weekdays, and I can swim in the evenings for practice. Her current grades, AB plus. She plays violin. She swims competitively 6 nights a week. She has healthy relationships with 3 girls outside of school, very connected with cousins. And she has been supplemented with homeschool curriculum since the third grade. Now, Mary here is asking, well, how much credibility, how much leverage do I give my daughter? Are these good enough reasons to be homeschooled? She goes on, my husband was opposed to homeschooling initially. So was I, Mary. Back when, many years ago, my wife wanted to homeschool, I was a consultant to the school systems, and I had wonderful memories of my own school years, and I thought I really wanted to be involved with the school settings. Things happened, and within a matter of a couple of years, I was on board with my wife homeschooling. My husband opposed homeschooling because our daughter's the only child, and he was concerned with her socialization. See, okay, I've talked about this many times. The socialization thing is a, what's the word I want to look for? Hoax? Misguided? Nonsense? Socialization? To what? Since when is socialization defined by the push and pull and the give and take of getting along with 22 kids your age? Especially kids who may be being raised quite differently. Socialization was always the purview of the grown-ups. That's who got socialized, who socialized the kids, not other kids. Dr. A, they need to know how to negotiate, getting along, the social skills involved in conflict resolution. There may be some of that, but it could be overwhelmed by the influence or by the bad socialization. If you don't want to homeschool, there are a lot of other reasons than just arguing about socialization. I've talked about this many times before. I don't want to keep going on that. It's for another time. I would like to homeschool her for her eighth grade year. See how she does. Is it possible that a 12-year-old's reasoning for homeschooling are not justifiable? Well, I guess I would say this, Mary. Yeah, she's talking about, I don't like it there. She's saying these are richer kids. I don't relate to them. I don't have any connections. You got to assess that. You got to see if, in fact, that she's having a real hard time fitting in. It may be that your kid's particularly mature for her age. It may be that she's motivated heavily and that she does not relate. This is not unusual for kids who are particularly mature for their age to not relate to their peer group. It's not unusual at all. I gave Mary a brief answer to her e-person, and I said, hey, the fact that your daughter wants you to is a big push. I usually tell parents, if the child is running from something that you feel is not legitimate, then you think about it and you pause. But if the kid makes the case, now Mary is saying, are there other reasons? Well, of course there are other reasons. Time with your child. Slowing down the peer pace of socialization. Keeping a little bit more of her innocence. Having a better schedule. I know my wife said personally she would not have had the relationship with the kids that she had had she not homeschooled. And I understand that simply because of time. You don't have time. Let's see. How do I not mix my crazy into my husband's desire for no homeschooling? Well, if you ask your husband, let me have a shot at it. Let me try it. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens to her mood, her contentment, her achievement scores, all these things. The socialization argument, Mary, I've tackled in a couple of my books. I forget which one. Advice Worth Ignoring, in that book, I really take apart the socialization argument. If that is his main concern, it's not a strong one. Not at all. It may even be a misguided one. So, thank you on that one, my dear. This is from Alex. I have consistent trouble in controlling stressful situations, even though I think the situation should not be stressful. My body starts to react by sweating profusely. I could be at a work meeting, a church meeting, serving as extraordinary minister, leading men's group. It seems that it stems from lacking confidence on what I have to do or say. And I start to think about what others will think of what I perceive myself to be. Any tips? Yeah, Alex, I do. How have you gotten to the point where you care so much about what others think? What is it that is driving you to give them such importance in how they look at you? In your case, it sounds like part of your worry and your fear is that they'll see that you're anxious. Do you want to know what the research says on that? By and large, when somebody has an anxious reaction in a situation, most people don't notice. You think that you're having major body reaction. Your hands are shaking and your breathing is shallow and you're sweating. They don't notice that. First of all, most people are not real observant. Second of all, anxiety is an internal state. It isn't real obvious, believe it or not. I know you think they all notice, and that's part of your anxiety. In most social anxiety situations, which is what you're describing, people get more anxious because they think that everybody is aware of how anxious they are. They're not. They're not, Alex. The deeper concern for you is their approval. Whether they look at you as competent, whether they look at you as not saying something dumb. How did that come about? How did you get to the point where it is so important that they believe you're a competent, in control, comfortable individual? Why is that? If you're a faithfully religious person, and I got to think you are because, you know, you obviously listen to Catholic radio, then their perception of you really is meaningless. And I'm not trivializing that. I'm saying their perception of you in a social situation, not in a moral situation, a social situation. Whether or not you would come across in a way that somebody would think, well, he's not a very bright guy, is he? That's meaningless. Your view of yourself comes from not what they think. It comes from what God thinks. To use a anthropomorphic term, because God doesn't think as we think thinking is.
Christianity is not inherently pacifist. The Hebrew word for kill, as in thou shalt not kill, is ratzash, which means murder. Our Lord himself compares the military chain of command with the faith of the centurion, whom he praises, in Matthew chapter 8, verse 10. The Catechism of the Catholic Church lays down the conditions for a just war, starting in number 2308. In Luke 14:31, the Prince of Peace tells a parable in which a king is advised to make sure he's ready before taking on a larger army. In Luke 22:16, he tells his apostles, in effect, to bear arms. He says, "Let him who has no sword sell his mantle and buy one." And who's more peaceful than Jesus? Let's pray for our military men and women overseas and for our brave law enforcement professionals here at home. This is Patrick Coffin of PatrickCoffin.media. Be a saint. What else is there?
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary in our cathedral.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
It's practically an epidemic. 20% of Americans suffer from anxiety disorders, and millions more wrestle with worry and stress on a daily basis. For us as Christians, all that worry gets mixed up with a lot of guilt. How can we stop worrying and start living an anxiety-free life? I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, and in my new book, Unworried, A Life Without Anxiety, you'll learn how to respect how God made us and build new habits of thinking, communicating, and acting that will help set you free from worry. You can get your copy of Unworried and any of my other books at AveMariaRadio.net.
Speaking 200 to 400 words a minute with gusts up to 800. I'm Dr. Ray Garindia, an elite member of Catholic Media's SWAT team, stopping whining and tantrums. By the way, whining and tantrums, you tend to think of a 3-year-old or 2-year-old, don't you? Unfortunately, my experience has been whining and tantrums are more common among adults. They may not be the meltdown, throw yourself on the floor kind, but I think adults whine more than kids do. The kids have the whine tone. That's what we call whining. Adults may not do that, but they do a lot more whining. They could say it in a different way, you know. And tantrums. Most adults don't throw themselves on the floor, but they have their own version of tantrums. I dare say it could be that we adults throw more tantrums than little kids do. This comes from Tara. I'm widowed 7 years now. I have a son raised in the Catholic faith. My husband didn't go to church. My son is in his 30s, two boys. Stepdaughter. Been married for a while. Unfortunately, he and his wife have never lived independently of financial help from my husband and I, now me. He's got a degree and he's working on a master's. His wife has a degree, she's working on another one. Long story short, they owe me a lot of money. Now, I want to stop right there, Terry. Why do they owe you a lot of money? Something moved you to keep giving them money. For them to owe you a lot of money, my guess would be you didn't give it in one lump sum. You didn't hand them $20,000 and say, here, put this as a down payment on a house. Over the years, gave them some for this, some for that, supported them for this, supported them for that. So the question for you is, how did that progress like that? What was it that motivated you to do all that? Out of what sense? Okay. They live in a place they can't afford. They buy things they can't afford. They both drive nice vehicles. They go daily for coffee. You get the picture, Dr. Ray. I received an email several months ago from my son saying they were going to pay me so much a week, plus a big amount every 3 months with their school monies to, quote, get me off their back. Oh, Terry, that tells you all you need to know, doesn't it? Get you off their back? In other words, you've given them a ton of money, and then when you're asking it back, for it back, they're mad. I've received little of those payments and none of the big payments. Several months ago, my son put 3 months of cable on a credit card of mine without permission. Not the first time, and he is not on my card. They've received lots of money from tax returns and monies from schools. Hasn't paid off any of this nor anything else he's promised. I've gotten a lawyer. She's not done a thing yet. I'm going to cancel the contract. I'll look for someone else. I removed my son from my power of attorney for both medical and financial, and I changed my will. He said he was sorry that I had to do that. He and I were very close. Terry, I know this hurts you. It says you say my heart is broken in a million pieces. How close were you really? Was he close to you because you kept supporting him financially? Did you start out by thinking, okay, I'm going to give him money to get on his feet, and then he's going to take it from there? And after he takes it from there, he'll get settled up and he'll start acting responsibly. Is that what you were thinking? And as time passed, as the years went on, and that didn't happen, did you continue to think, well, if I just keep supporting him? Do you feel used? And how close was that relationship over the years? He hasn't been in contact with me now, as they are planning a big trip during spring break. I sit here waiting for the money. They expected that I would go with them as a thank you for all I've done. We had a trip like that a couple years ago. Same theme, still waiting for that money. This has been ongoing. What would your advice be to me? And here's where she gives her explanation. I've just plugged along all this time and figured it will all work out. Terry, it seems to me that you are pretty tied up in guilt, pretty tied up in obligation, that somehow, some way, you owe this to your son and his wife. It's sad to see a child take advantage of you like this. It's very sad. Obviously, I don't think you raised him that way. But here's a problem we're having in our culture, and I see it more and more. Our kids have grown up in relative wealth, plenty, very much plenty. So they want what they want. They want their entertainment. They want their goodies. They want their perks. Before many of them fulfill their responsibilities. His first responsibility was to pay you back. He didn't. Why? Well, that would interfere with what he wanted to do. And he lived that way. And he felt justified in living that way. Maybe he thinks, you've got money. You should give some of it to me. Now, our culture has a lot of that attitude. Maybe he just imbibed some of it. My guess would be this, Terry, and I think this would be sad, but here'd be my guess. You said, I am so done with all this. If you are, be ready. because I think you'll get a lot of hostility. You may get avoided, and you may not see your grandkids. It wouldn't surprise me if that would happen, that you would be made out to be the bad person. Unfortunately, I don't know if there's anything you can do about that, because in your son and his wife's mind, you owe them. You need to get off their back, as they said, for wanting to be paid back. Well, at the very least, Terry, save your money from here on out. Our Lord does not expect you to do that. I am sure of that.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God. But I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have. And we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence. And in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Which of the seven sacraments has been especially instituted by Christ to aid those who are being tried by serious illness? It is the sacrament called the anointing of the sick. This sacrament was particularly promulgated by the Apostle James, who said, "Is anyone among you sick? Let him call the priests of the church, and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith will save the sick man, and the Lord will raise him up, and if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven." Over the centuries, the sacrament came to be used on those who were dying and was called extramunction. But in this day and age, it is seen not as a sacrament strictly for those who are near death, but also those who are gravely ill, in the hope they will recover. This is Peggy Stanton. And this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. Thank you for listening.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, the doctor is in E-Person Monday, where we take on your e-persons. Not email. I'm getting rid of any gender-insensitive language. Getting rid of all of it. All right. This is from Debbie. She says, advice, if you can provide it. Now, I'm hoping she's saying, I recognize you could be busy, as opposed to, I don't really think you'd have anything to offer me. Easy, Debbie, there. All right. I'm still going to do it. I have a great 23-year-old son. Graduated in engineering. Very responsible. He lives at home to save money, gives us money per month for lunch, food, snacks, but otherwise lives pretty much free at home. He does have a bit of a lead foot. All right, she's talking about driving the car. He has a great job, has a terrific opportunity to get a Camaro at a discounted rate. It's 2019. His insurance will be ridiculous in Michigan. I'm concerned about this. Safety with speed and risk and carjacking for this type of car. He wants to drive it in the winter. Yeah, you don't drive a 2019 Camaro in the winter. Come on. With winter tires. But again, I feel worry about the risk of a crash. Now, it's interesting. I think that Debbie has... said, no pun intended, she said, do I put my foot down? Well, no, because you're worried about he's going to put his foot down. And say no. Move out first. Or accept that I am mom and will always worry as he is an adult. And I have to let him make bad decisions. Well, here's the thing, Debbie. If you enjoy him there, you like him there, you're helping him out, and he's cooperative and pleasant, not giving you any trouble. If you force him out, if you say, you buy the car, you're gone, and he leaves, he's going to buy the car, right? So what have you gained? If your primary concern is his immaturity with the car, if you ask him to leave, he's going to buy the car. Now, if you say, well, if I ask him to leave, he won't buy the car. I cannot tell you what to do. But I can say this. He's 23 years old. This is not an immoral decision that he's making. He's not saying, I want to have relations with my girlfriend and stay overnight at her house and still live with you guys. He's not saying that. He's saying, I want to buy a car. And you're saying, well, I don't like the kind of car you're going to buy. I know you. Here's the thing, Debbie. Let's assume he buys a Camaro. And you say to yourself, yeah, he's got a lead foot, though. Well, doesn't he have a lead foot in any car he could buy? 80 miles an hour is 80 miles an hour, whether it's in a Camaro or in a Volkswagen Bug, it's 80 miles an hour. If you're saying, well, no, Dr. Ray, buy a fast-moving car like that, he's just going to be tempted to go faster and faster. You know, a 23-year-old kid, cool car. Interesting you would say this, Debbie. At age 22, when I graduated from college, I purchased a car. A Camaro. A really nice Camaro. A couple years later, I got rid of it because it was a lemon. But I bought it. I would say, at this point, these are decisions he's well within his rights to make. He's not saying to you, I'm going to buy a car, Mom, so I can go really fast and risk my life. He's not saying that. You're thinking that. You're thinking, hey, I know my son, you know, he could do this. Perhaps, perhaps not. It would seem to me that if you like him there, you want him there, you recognize he's 23 years old, and these are decisions well within his rights. Well within his rights. And sounds like you're just going to probably worry about the kind of stuff that this young man does as he's getting older. And you better watch out, too, because what if he meets some girl and you're thinking, oh, no, she's not what I would like for him. Oh, boy. See, that's a lot more significant than a car. The hardest part for us parents, watching children make their own decisions we wouldn't make, or that we wouldn't make for them, but recognizing it is no longer in our purview to make many of those decisions for them. I'm Dr. Ray. I'll be right back.
Dr. Ray. The EWTN home video highlight for May is the story of Father John Sullivan. A Protestant born into a life of privilege, he left everything to follow God's call to become a Catholic priest and serve the poor and afflicted. And the faithful were blessed with countless miracles. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or call 1-800-854-6316.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. I want to announce that Steve Ray and I will be going on pilgrimage to the great land of Poland, August 21st to August 30th.
We're going to follow John Paul II, Maria Faustina and the Divine Mercy, and Maximilian Kolbe. We're even going to visit Auschwitz and see the place where Maximilian Kolbe gave his life in the cell there.
People can get more information at AveMariaRadio.net. And where else, Steve?
CatholicConvert.com. Click on the big pilgrimage banner or call 866-468-1420.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Now, on the Ave Maria Radio app, the prayer section, where you can listen to the Holy Rosary. All four mysteries are voiced by Christ as the Answer and Father Knows Best host, Father John Ricardo. Are you struggling to remember specific prayers for pre- and post-confession, reciting the Stations of the Cross, or prayers during Eucharistic adoration? It's all there, word for word, and within a few clicks under the prayer section on the Ave Maria Radio app. Download it on your smart device today.
Dr. Rigorini, a warrior against psychological correctness. The notion that if you just handle a situation psychologically appropriately, it'll all work out the way you want. And the kid or the adult or any person in your life that you psychologically correctly handle will respond well. One thing I've learned about it in psychology, I really can't control how other people think. I can do what I can do to influence them if they ask me and want me to try to influence them. But short of that, I just have to look at it and go, well, I have to recognize my lack of power. This is from Nancy. My daughter is in the eighth grade. It's part of a graduation celebration. You ever notice that? They have graduation celebrations for everything. Yeah, kindergarten graduation, preschool graduation, sixth grade graduation if you're gone into a middle school, eighth grade graduation from elementary school. They got graduations all over the place. Many, many years ago, I know I'm digressing, I gave a talk. It was in Montana. Now, at that time, I liked Montana, because they had an unlimited expressway speed limit. So you could go 75 and not worry about it. I didn't want to go 90. That's crazy. Nobody else was doing that either. It wasn't the Audubon. I talked to a group, and the lady speaking before me made the observation that among certain of the Native American tribes, the children did not get gifts and were not rewarded for graduating or having birthdays. What they were to do was to give gifts to the people, the grown-ups, that made it possible for them to graduate. Or, in thanks, on their birthday, for all that the grown-ups had done for them for the previous year. I thought that was a wonderful idea. Instead, we give all this stuff to the kids. Why? Because you're a year older. All right, we'll give you all this stuff. But think about it. Not going to happen, but wouldn't it be cool if our culture had the idea that you've reached another year? Are there people in your life you'd like to thank with gifts? Okay. Back to the e-person. As part of the graduation celebration, a few parents are hosting a co-ed pool party and barbecue. Parents are welcome to attend. But even with this supervision, my husband and I do not feel comfortable with our daughter being in her swimsuit around her male peers. You realize you're running up against the cultural relaxation, dramatic relaxation of male and female interaction. I don't think it's good at all. I see the tragedies, the unexpected outcomes, the hurt, the pain, the drama, etc., 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 all the prematurity of it all. But the culture just is rushing headlong that way. I know she would like to hang out with her classmates and have fun. We wish it was just a barbecue. Yeah, in all likelihood, there's going to be an awful lot of very natural opposite sex interaction in a pool party. You can count on that. It's a given. So essentially, you've got these parents saying, cool, cool, come on, these kids are 13, this is good. And you're saying, I don't think this is wise. And I personally think you're right. You're very right. But the next few lines tells you the conundrum you're in. We've told our daughter she can go, as long as she wears shorts and a t-shirt. But she doesn't want to. If everyone else is swimming, she doesn't want to be the odd person out. Your thoughts, please. Well, Nance, I gave them to you. I think that's a generous compromise for you to tell your daughter that. You're running up against what more, I shouldn't say more and more parents. I should probably say a small minority of parents are running up against, which is, should you choose to make decisions counter to, and whatever area it's in, materialism, technology, dating, academics, sports, should you choose to make a decision as a parent that you think is in your child's well-being based upon your moral system, and that decision goes against the bulk of the culture, the direction the culture is going in, you will run into two problems. One, other people will look at you and question you and critique you, perhaps insult you, and accuse you of insensitivity, of not understanding your child, of basically being a bad parent. Okay, that's going to happen. There's no question about that. It's going to happen. And two, your child will look at you. Because children want you to parent by consensus. They want you to look at the group and say, this is the way the group does it, so how can it be wrong? This is what everybody is doing, Mom. And you're not. Parents worry because what about resentment? What about anger? What about sneaky deception? What about pushing the child toward doing the very same things you don't want them to do? Premature sexual interest. So parents are really caught. But as I've said many times, you have to do what you think is best and right for your child, even if no one else is doing it. Because if you compromise in a too loose of a way, and your children end up going with the flow of the peer group, you haven't won anything anyway. You may have temporarily gained their, what, acquiescence, goodwill? I don't even think you'll get that. Because there's no way you're going to keep up with the direction of the culture. No way. It's headlong moving too fast into areas you don't want your kid to go in. But if you try to stop it, you're going to run into this whole idea right now that you're running into, which is, well, my daughter doesn't want to go. Now I feel like I'm ripping her off from a graduation party with her friends, and she can't go because I won't let her wear a swimsuit that everybody else is wearing. What's the big deal? Right. And that's what you run into. The big deal is, as a parent, you're allowed to make those decisions. And if they blow up in your face, they blow up in your face. But you have to make the decisions you think are good and right. You do not parent by the bulk of other parents. That's not a good way to parent anymore. I'm convinced of it. I've lived in that world of parents and families for years. And I have come to the conclusion that in trying to raise a very moral, mature, responsible, and dare I say, innocent for her age child, you're going to run up against a solid majority that aren't going to do it that way. No question. So I think you have to ask your daughter, do you want to go like that or don't you? We're sorry that that's the way it's got to be for you, but that's where we're standing because we just think that's right now, at age 13, the best thing to do. Maybe she can call a couple friends and maybe they'll dress like that too. Who knows? Dr. Ray, thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is Eat Person Monday. Tomorrow, good Lord permitting, we'll get to talk again personally, ear to ear. Walk with God, hold your kids tightly by the hand. Against a culture, no longer on your side.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.